Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Getting bad already in New York. Mike Greenberg has had his meltdown live on the air as they found out that Justin Fields has been carted off. He said, I can't say anything. It's the first freaking practice. Everybody else needs to talk for me.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
That's good.
I mean, Schadenfreude at its finest here, man. Yeah. Happiness at the misfortune of others, right? And that's kind of what everybody's doing with the Jets. In case you missed, the breaking news of the day is that Justin Fields got injured on an incomplete pass in a pocket that he was throwing, not much of a rush, and kind of walked off the field into the tent and then was carted from the tent back into the facility. So there was walking and carting involved.
Yep.
So
on his own power.
You know, we'll kind of figure out how serious that becomes.
In the front seat of the cart as well.
Right. I mean, we're really breaking this thing down, bro. Like really breaking this down. And I apologize for not looking at you as we're having this conversation, but I keep following on X to see if there's
refreshing.
Any,
you know, no, I get it.
There's update after update after update of this one. So that's the kind of the breaking news of the day is that, you know, Justin Fields has gone down at Jets practice. And it like if it's going to happen to one team, it's going to happen to the Jets. So we'll keep you updated on that because that is the biggest story of the day now in the NFL. Yesterday, Royals go out and they take the series from the Chicago Cubs, winning 2 out of 3 up there. Salvi hits his home run, and that means he's 9 away now from 1,000, from 300. If he was 9 away from 1,000 home runs, it'd be a little bit bigger of a story than 300, right? So he's 9 away from 300 right now of you know, getting to that big-time mark that will, by all accounts and purposes, put him into the Hall of Fame once he gets to that 300th home run. But yesterday, I believe that we should have seen, whether we do or not, but we should have seen Seth Lugo's last start as a member of the Kansas City Royals. Trading him is actually really smart, in my opinion, for the long-term health and success of this franchise. And he pitched brilliantly yesterday. I've heard, you know, rumblings around baseball from people inside the game, inside the organization, outside the organization, all over, talking about the potential that yesterday was Lugo's last start with this ball club. And you know, I agree. It should be his last start because what Ken Rosenthal reported the other day in The Athletic, I believe, is who had the story, was that if the Royals were going to trade Seth Lugo, they would want a controllable bat back in return. And yeah, obviously, that's what you want to get back in return for somebody because that's the biggest weakness on this team right now, and it appears to be the biggest weakness in the minors. The outfield right now is not very good from an offensive standpoint, right? Kyle Isbell is good in spurts, but other than that, there really isn't much production from either corner outfield spot. So you can get better. You can get better there. Here's a suggestion that I have for the Royals and one that I would be in favor of making the move for. The Boston Red Sox right now are kind of a contending team. They need some starting pitching. They have an extra outfielder, Jarren Duran, who's rumored to be one of the more sought-after tradable outfielders out there on the market right now. I believe he has 9 homers, 50-some RBIs. He's kind of the odd man out in Boston right now. Once they brought up Roman Anthony, there was kind of no room at the inn for Jarren Duran. He was really good last year, finishing in the top 10 in many award categories last year. People knew who he was, right? And now he's kind of taking a back seat in Boston. Just because you take a back seat somewhere doesn't mean you're not ready for a front seat ride, right? Jarren Duran proved last year he was ready for it. He's putting up some good power numbers this year. The Boston Red Sox are right in the middle of a postseason run. They're trying to compete for the postseason. They're coming off a streak where they won 10 in a row. Who wouldn't want Seth Lugo in their rotation? Who wouldn't want that steady Eddie of a guy in their rotation in the postseason? And so that's why I think it should be Seth Lugo's last appearance for the Royals, because I don't know that the Royals are a playoff team right now. I don't think they're a playoff team right now. Judging by the standings, they're not a playoff team right now. You have Seth Lugo on your team. Why not trade Seth Lugo for the rest of this season, get better in the outfield, and have a guy like Jarren Duran, who's under team control through 2028, on your roster? That tells me you got better today and you were able to get better for the long term. And I don't think Seth Lugo, having him on your roster or not having him on your roster at this point of the season, is going to make that much difference in whether or not you make it into the postseason. You've proven that you can pitch. You've got to score some runs. And if you take a little bit of a hit in the rotation, but maximize that player's value and got an outfield bat in return that can drive in runs today and for the next couple of years, I think you made your organization better both in the short term and in the long term as well. Because Lugo's a free agent at the end of this season, right? We all know that. He's not going to accept his option year of $15 million. He's going to go and test free agency. Now, the Royals could keep him and offer him a qualifying offer, and if he signs elsewhere, then you get a draft pick and compensation back in return. But that's not sexy. That's not something that fans really get excited about. It's something the organization can get excited about. But I think fans would be more excited if you went out and traded for a bat now, even if you had to give up Seth Lugo. Because I think if you trade for a bat right now and it ends up being Jarren Duran or somebody like that of a name that you know, and you go out and get a proven major league bat for this lineup, I think that makes you better both today and in the long term. And so that's why I'm looking at this Seth Lugo situation from yesterday and saying, man, he was really good yesterday. I hope that's the last we see of Seth Lugo, because I think he's more valuable to this team as a trade chip than he is as a roster piece right now. And at the end of the year, if he wants to come back and you want to sign him back, by all means, do it. You can do that at the end of this season because he's going to be a free agent.
Yeah, the last thing you want is to go through this season just trying to crawl your way back up, not get there, never really be in true contention, and then see Seth Lugo walk away for free.
Right.
And you get nothing for that. That is
except a comp pick if you offer him the qualifying deal. And that's kind of, yeah.
Are we getting excited about a comp pick? Okay, great. Then I think, because you can get something, like you just mentioned, Duran's, like that's a real viable bat
right
off the top who you have control over till, you said, what, 2028?
2028, yeah.
Yeah, man, I'll take that over a comp pick any day, because I think one thing in all of sports, when you see franchises let good talent walk away and not be proactive about trading them, get rid of them a year early, not a year too late, all of those sorts of adages that we always talk about, that's what good franchises do. The Royals got to be proactive here.
Yeah, who are the two best franchises in sports over the last 25 years?
The Chiefs.
And?
The Spurs?
Patriots.
Okay, the Patriots? Yeah. Okay.
The Chiefs and the Patriots, right? Yep. What do they always do?
That's it, yep. Year too early, not a year too late.
Absolutely.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, the Patriots parted with a lot of players that people thought, oh my God, I can't believe.
What are they doing?
Get rid of that guy. Get rid of this guy. Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill, you know? So you've got to be able to look at the big picture and realize that sacrificing a start every fifth day for the potential to grow your organization, that's a bad way to look at things, right? Now, maybe there aren't offers for Lugo. I doubt that. I'm sure there's plenty of good offers out there for Seth Lugo. You take the best one that's been, you know, offered to you, and you make that move with Lugo. That's what I would do. I take the best offer that I could get and move on him. I don't like the we can't trade that guy. Everybody's available to be traded. And I've been saying that for years, other than Patrick Mahomes, right? Everybody is available for the right price. And if it's going to make your organization better, then you have to go out there and do it. And again, even back to the New England Patriots, Vince Wilfork was cut early. Mike Vrabel was sent packing early. Like, those are just two guys off the top of my head where the Patriots didn't miss a beat because they had that quarterback and they had that head coach, and they had the ability to have everybody else basically as a revolving door. And the Royals can have that as well. You can have Bobby Witt and Salvador Perez and, you know, Vinny Pasquantino as your core, and everybody else is a recycled part, and you just kind of move on from those guys. Where franchises really do get hurt, and you made the point, you wait too long to get rid of somebody.
Yep.
This is an opportunity for the Royals to get better, to grow their organization, to make their team better in the near term and in the far term as well. And that's by trading Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo being on this roster after July 31st doesn't really help your ball club out. It doesn't help your team grow. It doesn't help your team get better. It gives you the illusion that you're still in the race, but until you're a 500 team and you've passed a bunch of these teams in the wild card standing, you're not in the race. And, you know, you got a big series this weekend against the Indians. They're coming into town. They're ahead of you in the standings. They're back into the race. They're playing good baseball right now. You have an opportunity this weekend to steal some games. You got to take care of business, but you also can't, you know, not look at the future of your organization because you're worried about today. If you're worried about today, you're not focused on the big picture. Yeah. And that's the one thing that Brett Veach has always done great. He can win now and build for the future. Win now and build for the future. And JJ's got the opportunity. You can still win now with Seth Lugo. You can still make the playoffs with Seth Lugo.
Hell yeah.
But you can't grow your organization with Seth Lugo on your roster still.
35 years old as well, to your point. From the text line, is that a straight-up trade? Would it take someone else?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm just using a couple of big pieces. You know, there would obviously be other things maybe thrown in the mix and all that.
913 says Lugo and Estevez for Duran.
I'd do that, too.
There you go. And then 816 says Patriots. Richard Seymour is another one.
Seymour,
yep. Damian Woody is another one. Yep, there's a few of them.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Teddy Bruschi's probably another one. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, they got away from these guys before we said, oh, that guy's old and it's sad to watch him play.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Seth Lugo is, but he's a free agent at the end of the season. The best thing you can do for your organization is to trade Seth Lugo.
Sell high.
Sell high, baby. Sell high. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, there's a great conspiracy out there that is so wrong, it's going to be so much fun to talk about when it comes to the NFL next.
Hey, it's Bobby Witt Jr., and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Going Dusty, 96.5 The Fan. Watch the manager in the dugout with the coach after the home run is hit, Mac. That's what you got to be looking for in that video. We'll describe what's going on there in just 1 second, but the news continues to trickle in from Jets camp. This one now from Adam Schefter, who is the ESPN reporter for football over there at the Worldwide Leader, and he tweets out, Jets quarterback Justin Fields is coming about 20 minutes ago. Justin Fields was carted off the field this morning. The team fears he has torn his Achilles, which would sideline him for the remainder of the season. And so that's what they're going right now with Justin Fields. That's the latest from Adam Schefter. They think it's going to be that's a fake Adam Schefter. I got
Scheffler.
Yeah. No, it's Adam Schefter and the T is a one. My bad.
There you go.
BBL stinky. Yeah, it really was. Yep. I got on that one. Actually, Ben Maller sent that to me, so I blame him. Oh. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, no, we got on
that
one.
When you were saying
that,
I was like, what, Adam Schefter? Because I get notifications.
Oh, you were looking up for that, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on?
Oh, well, you got it.
That happens.
Yeah, at least I admitted it. That's fine.
I've been pounded this week.
Did you see this Romy Gonzalez grand slam in the game last night against Philadelphia? This is one of the most intriguing baseball videos that we've seen in quite some time, right? And it's tweeted out by a gentleman named Luke, who's the Phillies writer for at Crossing Broad and Fox Philadelphia Gambler and whatnot, right? So he's a Phillies guy.
Gotcha.
And so he tweeted out this video that looks like it's coming from like the first base side of the field, right? It looks like it's kind of a, you know, that angle. And you can see Alex Cora in the background signaling like four fingers up. Like he clearly has a read on what pitch is coming. They say the runner at second base recognizes that, signals right back to Lizardo, who's at the plate, and then he cranks a grand slam. The thing that's interesting about all that is, as soon as he hits the ball, Cora and one of the assistant coaches on the bench high-five each other like they just solved the quadratic equation.
They do, you know? You're right.
Like that's the dead giveaway that they picked up on something.
Uh-huh.
That's not cheating.
No, that's not cheating at all.
That's gamesmanship in baseball. When you can pick up on that, and when guys are tipping pitches, hey, you take advantage of that all day long.
Same thing in football.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I know you're red 17, and when I know what that means now, yeah, guess what? We're gonna shut it down the rest of the game.
Well, your guy Dave Taub, is that what you call Tube or whatever you call him?
Tube, he got
back in the early days when they were playing the Titans and they lost that game on a block kick at the end. Remember that game?
Oh, I do remember that
game.
And
they said they were using the same snap count every single time. So the Tennessee Titan players knew. They jumped the snap count, blacked that field goal, and went and changed the game. And so they lost that game. That was the last time that the Chiefs would lose that year, obviously. But they were able to block the field goal because they knew what was coming. They knew the play. They knew the situation. Kind of like what we did against Denver.
Exactly the same. Yep. You know that left guard, he's getting blown back. All right, let's blow him up even more. Let's double team him and let's time it and let's go.
Yep. And let's figure this thing out. And so that's coaching. And so you can
absolutely see
Alex Cora there. They recognize something. And then they high-fived him from the text line to the six. Isn't that what the Astros did? No. The Astros
0%
were using trash cans. The Astros were cheating. This is stealing. This is not stealing signs. This is looking and figuring out this pitcher, every time he throws a curveball, is doing this with his glove. Or every time he throws a breaking ball, he's doing that with his glove. That's legal in the game of baseball. That's legal in sports. You look for tendencies all the time. And that's why, when you do film study and stuff like that, you have dudes that are looking for those tendencies to try 100%. To pick something up. Great job by the Red Sox on this one. I know some people will say it's cheating, but it's not.
No, it's not cheating at all. And again, back to the football comparison. I mean, it's like, I know you played lineman too, but I'm like, if you see the white of your knuckles as a defensive lineman against the O-line, you see the white of those knuckles, okay, he's leaning forward. He's going to come at me. It's a run, okay?
Yeah.
If he's leaning back, okay, he's getting ready for a pass. Like, just picking up on those things, that is, like you said, that's gamesmanship, that's strategic. That's what's fun about sports. I love that.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I think we need more of that sort of stuff in sport. I think it's awesome. I think seeing it's like when there's so many of these examples, but I can't remember the exact one. But it was Cam Newton on the goal line, and the defender's like, you know, run, run, run. Cam Newton's like, oh, you've been watching film. Watch this. And it's a different play, right? So you can see it in a lot of different ways in sports. But yeah, that is a really cool video that you just reposted on your Twitter.
It really is. It's wild. You can see the manager and his coach in the background high-fiving when they got it right. And that was really cool to see. So, just be careful out there, man. Like these big leaguers, no matter how good you are, you still get into circumstances where you're tipping your pitches, and big leaguers will catch on to that right away. All right, play this Colin Cowherd audio, please, because he came up with a great conspiracy, which on the surface sounds good, but at the end of the day, it seemed like a big word salad to me.
In fact, this is the worst-kept secret in the South. Haslam, Jimmy, owner of the Browns, huge SEC Tennessee booster, leans heavily on the Manning family. Very close to the Manning family. Yes, that's not make-believe. Arch Manning is part of the Manning family, and this is where Nick Saban comes in. Saban is incredibly close to not only Jimmy Haslam, but Saban's close to the Manning family as well. And so Saban, if he could land, I'm told, a top quarterback like Harbaugh going to the Chargers for Herbert, he would take a phone call for the NFL. And there are two teams guaranteed to be awful this year in the NFL. Cleveland and the Saints. Nick Saban has coached in Cleveland with the Browns under the Belichick staff, and he coached at LSU. This is not a conspiracy theory.
There you go.
It's a terrible theory, though.
It's not a conspiracy.
This is not a conspiracy theory.
Isn't that exactly what it is?
I think the Jets are the leaders in the clubhouse for Arch Manning right now.
Okay. After this Fields news?
Right? Wouldn't you say, like,
if he's really out, yeah.
If you're doing conspiracy theories, how do you fix one of the big-time organizations? You get him a quarterback, right? The Jets have been an utter disaster since all of us have been born. It's a New York market. You want to fix that organization? What do? You send Arch Manning to the Jets. Now, would the Mannings let him play for the Jets? I don't know.
I would say no.
But would the Mannings let him play for the Browns?
Exactly. That's the thing.
Right?
Jets or Browns? I don't know. I kind of lean Jets.
So if you're really, really into conspiracies, Arch Manning goes to New Orleans. It's where he's the household name.
For
right?
sure. Yep.
He's going to save that franchise. He's Archie's grandson. Archie saved that franchise. Archie is that franchise. They are New Orleans. Like, that's where you send Arch Manning. Carrington is always big on the say it out loud test, right? Say it out loud. Does it make sense when you say it out loud? He literally linked Nick Saban to the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
I don't care if my best friend is the owner of the Cleveland Browns. I ain't going to be the coach of that organization. That organization stinks. And they don't have a proven quarterback. And oh, by the way, say they did finish with the worst record and had the number one pick and they drafted Arch Manning at number one. They still don't have a proven quarterback because there's no guarantees that Arch Manning, who did not start while a sixth round draft pick started ahead of him last year at Texas, there are still no guarantees that just because he has the last name Manning, he's going to be good in the NFL. It doesn't guarantee you anything, right? So to add up all of these things, that just doesn't make any sense for me. If you're Nick Saban, what makes sense for you, and Ben Maller rolled this one out a couple of weeks ago, the Buffalo Bills make sense if you're Nick Saban.
Oh, okay.
You've got a team that's ready to win. You've got a quarterback that's ready to win. You just have the coach that's Marty Schottenheimer that can't get you over that hump. You need that coach that's going to get you over that hump. We've seen it in sports. The best analogy I can use with that, that I think is the one that I think a lot of people would recognize, is like when Buck Showalter was managing the Yankees and they were really good, but they couldn't get over the hump. They hired Joe Torre, they went on and they won World Series, right? Basically with the same roster. A couple additions, changes obviously here and there, but Joe Torre was that guy who got them over the hump,
yeah.
Got them to the point where they were able to win, right? It happens a lot in sports. Sometimes the next guy comes in. I mean, we saw it, you know, in Tampa, right? John Gruden came in, took over for Tony Dungy. His team went on and they won the Super Bowl that year,
right?
Very next year, different voice, different mindset, different way of doing business, different approach to things like that get you over that hump. So that's one destination I would think would be Buffalo for Nick Saban. And number two, Cincinnati.
Oh, okay.
Cincinnati could be another destination
because that's
a good team, allegedly. But they have the quarterback in place. They have the offense in place. Maybe they just need a new voice in place that's going to be able to get them over the hump. So if I'm Nick Saban and I'm sitting out there thinking about where I want to go, if I want to do this in the NFL, I'm in my mid-70s. The last place I'd want to go is Cleveland. The last place I'd want to go is for a rebuild. If I'm Nick Saban, what I want to do is if I'm going back to the NFL where he didn't have success for a year when he was with Miami, I want to go to a place that's ready to win and I can take over and just help them get over the hump. I don't want to be the catalyst and I don't want to build this organization, but I want to reap the benefits of the organization that's been built and help them get over the hump. That's the logical hire for me, is either Buffalo or Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think asking, is Nick Saban good for this team, or is this team good for Nick Saban? I think you should ask, is Nick Saban good for the NFL or good for these teams as well? Like, I don't know if I'm the Bills or the Bengals, if that's my first choice. I know he's a leader and he's got a voice that people will listen to, but I don't know if he's knows the NFL landscape. Like, I'd want my guy to know the NFL landscape. We've talked about going from college to the NFL. That is as hard as it gets. We've
right.
seen very few succeed. Even Nick Saban, we've seen fail
right.
in the NFL level. Now, going from the NFL to college, what Bill Belichick just did, a little more plausible to see immediate success. I don't know if I feel like Nick Saban is that guy, and I certainly don't feel like he would go to the Browns, even if him and Jimmy Haslam are butt buddies. I don't think that's it. And when it comes to Arch Manning, I mean, man, him beating up on, you know, Our Ladies of Perpetual Sorrow last year for a couple weeks when yours was out, like, that didn't get me excited. I don't
right.
see Peyton or Eli quite yet in Arch Manning. I need to see a lot more from him to just be like, yeah, we're kind of selling the house for Arch Manning. Everything in the next 5 years is put on this guy. We're ready to have him lead our billion-dollar organization. I need to see I need to see a lot from him this year. And I think that's a fair thing to say. And also this just in from Adam Schefter, the real Adam Schefter.
Yes.
Jets coach Aaron Glenn told reporters that Justin Fields suffered a toe injury today. It is too early to determine its severity.
Okay, so it's not that big a deal.
Shouldn't be, right? Unless it's like a really bad case of turf toe or something.
Which hurts. I've had
pain.
You know, but you know what? You lop it off.
Yeah, Fields isn't going to sit because he's got turf toe.
You know, tape it up and rub some dirt on it. Like, this isn't an Achilles. This isn't a calf blown out. This isn't a knee injury. I mean, we're talking about a toe injury here. That's not, I mean, I think Jets world can kind of calm down now.
Take a breath
a little bit anyway, and we'll
see. Get over a month till a real game.
Yeah. So this whole story that became big this morning kind of dissipated, right?
Pretty quickly,
very fast. Not as big a deal as everybody was thinking.
But is that fair to say with Arch Manning, man? I mean, are we just kind of, I don't know, what does it say? Putting the cart before the horse on this one?
Yeah, you sound like me in this equation, right? You know, because like I'm not sold on Arch Manning. Just because you have the last name Manning doesn't mean you're going to be good. And I keep going back to what Steve Spurrier said. If he's so good, why was a 7th-round draft pick or a 6th-round draft pick starting over him
exactly
in college,
right? Like if he's as damn good as we think he is, he would have been playing.
He would have been playing, right? Unless now that could be old head Spurrier talking, and he doesn't know how much money Texas paid Quinn Ewers, and you know, it is a different world than what we're living in right now. And did they guarantee him things in a contract or whatever the case may be? I don't know how any of that kind of stuff played out. But I think there's going to be for certain players this year and certain situations this year, there's going to be quarterbacks and coaches that are under a lot of pressure. I think Deion Sanders is going to be under a lot of pressure out there in Colorado. I think the microscope is going to be very big on, Arch Manning down in Texas this year. I think the microscope is going to be very big on Bill Belichick this year. But I don't think any quarterback or any player going into a season in college football history is going to have as much scrutiny and as many people watching him as Arch Manning is. And I will say this as well, and I hate to be that guy, I think he's probably going to have a lot of apologists for him as well. If he doesn't play well, you're going to see a lot of the fanboys and a lot of the apologists and a lot of the folks that are kind of, aligned with Peyton Manning and that Manning family probably go out there and say, oh, it was a bad route, or, they'll blame other stuff, right?
Yes.
Like, I feel like we're going to see a lot of that as well with Arch Manning. You're going to have the defenders lining up very, very fast to defend him if he doesn't play as well as everybody thinks, because the expectation on him is to be Patrick Mahomes 50 and 5,000, and that's just not realistic at the college level, in my opinion.
100%. Yeah, the question is, Steve Sarkisian really the offensive mind we thought? I mean, he's not able to even get Arch Manning going. It's like, okay, well, what does that mean? Who is Arch Manning? I'm excited about it. I want him to be good. Trust me.
Yeah.
Anytime a Manning comes up, like, let's go. Another Manning in the NFL, and I hope it's not as good as his brothers, maybe, or especially the oldest, Peyton, but
his uncles.
His uncles, yes, you're right. Thank you. His uncles. But I'd love to see him be great.
Yeah.
And he's a different style quarterback than them, too, which is cool. He's more modernized. He's quicker. He's more athletic. He's fast.
Well, anybody's quicker than Peyton and Eli.
The bar low. You're right. That's pretty low.
The bar is pretty low. All right, let's get into some Chiefs conversation. I asked you this question earlier in the day, maybe yesterday, actually. There are two Chiefs that need to be healthy all season other than Patrick Mahomes. Who are the two Chiefs that you think need to be healthy all season long for the Chiefs to have their success this year, not named Patrick Mahomes? You get to choose from other 52 guys on the roster.
I'm going to go the second leader on the offense, and that's Creed Humphrey. No other position or positional unit, rather, uses communication and I need to know where you are, what you're doing, your tendencies more than the O-line. Just as much as quarterback to his wide receivers, it's offensive lineman to the guy right next to you, right? Creed Humphrey is orchestrating that all up front. He is the conductor, and he's the best conductor in the league, and they're going to need him as far as that communication, especially with a young left side of the line next to him. No matter what happens on the left side of the line, Kingsley, Caliendo, Josh Simmons, Jalen Moore, whatever combinations you get, you're getting not a lot of experience on the left side of the line next to Creed Humphrey. So it's going to be a lot for him to kind of make sure they've got what they need to know down. And then on the defense, I'll go Chris Jones. The trenches leader on that side of the ball. He's the best player on that side of the ball for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he's one of the best players on defense in the whole National Football League. I think when he wreaks havoc, the rest of everyone's job gets easier. If Chris Jones was out for a long period of time, I would be extremely concerned with the level this defense could play.
Yeah, I mean, I think he would be a big loss, obviously, on the defense if he wasn't part of the equation. We saw what happened when he missed that game against the Lions. I'm going to go a little bit of a different route on this one. I think the first one that comes to mind for me that has to be healthy all season long is Trent McDuffie. We're already seeing a big injury with Fulton right now kind of affect that defensive backfield and what they wanted to do. Everything, you know, great plans on paper sometimes don't come to fruition. And if Fulton is hurt, then that's a situation where Trent McDuffie can't be at his best playing the slot, right? And so he's going to have to go back to, you know, playing what he's not the best at, which is he's still really good at. But, you know, you want to get him in that slot position, especially in a contract year, for him to go out there and dominate. So I think Trent McDuffie is one name that comes to mind that needs to be healthy all season long. We're in a passing league now in the NFL. Trent McDuffie has done an unbelievable job of eliminating half the field for the last 2 years, where it has not been an issue for the Chiefs. Nobody's even looking his way. Nobody's even throwing to his side of the field. He only has the two interceptions because that's the only two times somebody has thrown his direction. You know, nobody goes that way because of how good he is. So I need him to be healthy all season long. And the other guy that I need to be healthy all season long is Harrison Butker. I need Harrison Butker to be healthy all season long because he is a guy that we just take for granted. He's a guy that we don't, I think, appreciate until he's gone. And a couple of years ago when we didn't have Harrison Butker and we had four different kickers kind of roll in and everybody's like, what are we going to do? Are they just going to cut Butker? He's got this injured ankle. Is he ever going to come back? No, the Chiefs stuck with Harrison Butker and kept him around because they knew how valuable he is. And when we didn't have him for those games and for that stretch 2 years ago, we realized how valuable Harrison Butker is. I realized how Harrison Butker is valuable when this offense hasn't been able to get the points that it wants to get, but you could get into field goal range just over the 50-yard line, and Harrison Butker is there to kick it through the uprights to at least give you 3 points and give you an opportunity, you know, to dig into leads if you were, you know, if you were behind, or if you're down two, to put you up one. Like, Harrison Butker's health is as paramount as anything on this team.
Yeah, he's the difference of getting points from 3 first downs or getting points from 4 or 4.5 first downs sort of thing. He shortens the field so much. His value is not wasted on the fans here. I think Rice has the most chemistry with Pat right now, and it's important he stays on the field from the 816. From the 816, Harrison Butker is more valuable than he gets credit for. I think he's crucial. There you go. And another 816, Chris Jones and Harrison Butker. So you're not alone in thinking that.
Yeah, I mean, he is a guy that I think is as valuable to this franchise as anybody. Nobody will be more valuable than Mahomes and Andy Reid. But, I mean, if you're talking about who is so valuable and who's important to this franchise, the name Harrison Butker has to come up and it has to be in conversation because nobody, I don't think, around the NFL right now, now that Justin Tucker is no longer with us, nobody around the NFL has a kicker and a weapon that they can rely on like Harrison Butker. And it is a real legit weapon. Ask Buffalo. Ask any team that's lost in the playoffs to the Kansas City Chiefs, right? Every team that's lost in the playoffs has lost because of Harrison Butker at one point or another hitting a big-time field goal against them and winning the game. Or having your kicker miss a big-time field goal and you looking across the field and going, damn it.
Wish we had the Butker.
Yeah, wish we had Butker on this team, man. Wish we had Butker on this team. So
this is not a conspiracy theory.
No, it is definitely not a conspiracy theory. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, there is some interesting text that I want to get to because somebody made a great point about falling in love with the overhyped player. We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty.
What the hell's wrong with your station?
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
The Fan, Fesco and Dusty with you. Dusty is off today. Mac is in. Dusty off for the rest of the week, and he is on vacation, and Mac will be in, filling in for him for the rest of the week. Binkley's in tomorrow on the drive, I think I heard. I think he's already here,
buddy.
Getting ready for that as training camp, you know, starts to take place and whatnot. So one of the texts that came in as we were kind of talking about some of this Arch Manning situation is that Arch Manning says, or not Arch Manning, but the text says, you know, overhyped players always disappoint. It's crazy the sports world always forgets that every single year from the 913. And it says, kind of like you guys with Jack Caglione. I was very milk toast on Jack Caglione. I was not ready.
You were not the one show.
Yeah, I was not the one who wanted to bring Jack Caglione up, but I wasn't going to get in the way of everybody's enthusiasm, especially when he was dominating the way that he was. But he wasn't ready to come up here. We all knew that, but we wanted him to be good. They brought him up the worst possible time. I never thought Jack Caglione should have come up to the big league level, but everybody wanted him up. We got him up here, and now we're seeing kind of what this text is alluding to.
Yeah.
The overhyped player hardly ever has the success that we overhype them up for. Let's take Shador Sanders for an example, right? Decent college football player, 13-12. But you know what Shador Sanders did? He brought excitement. He brought fun. He brought intrigue. He got me, as a casual sports fan, and a zero fan of the Colorado Buffaloes, to be interested and to pay attention. That's what a lot of this hype train is about, getting us to pay attention. And then you've got to deliver on top of that, right? Do I think Arch Manning is going to be a good quarterback? I don't know the answer to that question right now. You would say by the pedigree he would be, right? If he's got the work ethic and the smarts of his cousin or his uncles and his grandfather and, you know, whatnot, and he's built from that mold, yeah, I think he's going to put himself in position to be successful. But I think that text is dead on. I think when you talk about these overhyped guys and the guys we really get excited for, 9 times out of 10, it's not those guys that go out there and produce and become the household name. Like, I would bet at the end of the college football season, we're talking about Arch Manning, but I'm sure there's going to be somebody else that hits the scene that we're not talking about right now.
For sure.
That may go out there and just surprise everybody, you know?
Could be Dylan Raiola. Just saying. Cade Klubnik. Yeah, there are a couple. Drew Aller. There are a couple names that could surprise us. But I think, yeah, I mean, it's easier to find the ones that did fulfill their prophecy rather than the ones that didn't, because those are all, most of the overhyped prospects, yes, they end up being what we just said, overhyped. But
yeah,
you know, Trevor Lawrence so far, I mean, that was, my God, he was held at the highest pedestal. He was the next Peyton Manning, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Andrew Luck, I'd say Andrew Luck lived up to it. He didn't win a Super Bowl. I know he didn't get the playoff success, but he got hurt a lot.
Yep.
As far as just his talent as a quarterback, I thought he lived up to that. LeBron James, right, he lived up to it.
Mm-hmm. But how many people that were teenagers that didn't go to college that went right from high school to the NBA failed?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Most of them.
Felipe Lopez is the name that I think comes to mind for everybody, who was supposed to go to St. John's and went right to the NBA, and you never heard from him again.
Yeah, exactly.
You never heard from that guy again. You know who wasn't hyped all that much, who was told he was going to be no good, was Patrick Mahomes, mm-hmm. right? Because he wasn't a hyped quarterback when he was drafted. But, you know, Deshaun Watson was a hyped quarterback when he was drafted. Mitch Trubisky was drafted 2 overall that year. I'm sure he was a hyped quarterback, you know, that year that he was drafted. We kind of slow played Patrick Mahomes. I think a lot of people slow played Patrick Mahomes.
For
people
sure.
thought he'd be available in the 20s or maybe in the second round or what. I remember Josh sitting here goes, yeah, maybe take a flyer on him in the third round if he's there.
Yeah.
One of those type of things, right? You're like, he wasn't the hyped guy coming out. I think people were intrigued by Patrick Mahomes, but I don't think the hype train was working for Patrick Mahomes. But it does. It seems like when that hype train is there, the players that are on that hype train never really pan out. From the text line, Mondesi. You know, that's a great example. That's
exactly right.
It's a great example. Bingo. From the 816, man. That was so good from the 816.
BBL stinky.
Yeah. Mike Trout, Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper's lived up to the hype train. He got there a little bit late, but Bryce Harper, I think, has lived up to it. Mike Trout is an injury guy, right? He's an absolute, you know, wreck because he gets hurt all
but those
the time.
First, what was it, those first 3 years or whatever? I mean, he was like on a...
Trout, you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. He was on a trajectory, like an all-time type trajectory. So
right.
I would give him that.
I mean, you know, I know the card industry is coming back in a strong way, but like go back and look at like your rated rookies back from the 80s and 90s, because that's what I'm doing right now. I'm going through all of these cards to see if there's anything worthwhile, because some stuff actually is. I found a $35 card in there the other day. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But like you go look at some of these like rated rookie cards or some of these, you know, cards that the card companies are putting out with these great rookies back in the day. How many of those actually turned into, you know, something big? I mean, we've seen it here in Kansas City a lot with a lot of talent on the baseball side of things. You know, we hype up guys and they don't pan out.
Yeah.
We hype up guys, they don't pan out. Bubba Starling, another good one that's coming in from a lot of people. Avery Johnson, I see a lot on the text line right now.
Yeah.
He's going to have a really good year. He's not being hyped up at all.
I know.
Like that's not a name that people are throwing out there. And I think obviously because it's Manhattan, Kansas, right? I mean, that's a name that doesn't get thrown out there. But I think what we're looking at with him and not with him, but with these players is that we put so much pressure on them to deliver. Like, think about when you were however old Arch Manning is, 18, 19 years old, okay? Not only were you 18 or 19 years old and not know anything, you're trying to figure out who you are as a human being, right? You're going away to college for the first time. Now you've got the weight of this university, the state, the NIL, man. The Jeez. Manning name.
Can't imagine.
There's a lot of pressure on Manning, yeah. right? A lot of pressure on Arch Manning. More pressure on him that was on like Eli Manning back in the day, or even Peyton Manning back in the day. It's a different ball game right now. So if he comes out of this and he becomes a great quarterback at the University of Texas, then I say, yeah, he's got what it takes. But the jury's still out on him. I'm not ready to crown somebody yet. They haven't done anything yet. And for me to crown somebody before they've done something, yeah, that's not fair to the player either, you know?
Completely agree. From the 913, Jalen Daniels had a lot of hype at KU, but was constantly hurt. Maybe this year he goes off. Fair?
Yeah. Maybe. Or maybe he doesn't. Like, I mean, to me, I look at him, and I'm like, I've seen this act now for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
It's hard to get excited about Daniels at KU. It is.
And a year ago from today, man, the hype was real, like that texter said with Jalen Daniels. He was like a top 15 Heisman guy. Like you could have bet on him to win the Heisman and not be laughed at.
Right.
The Cags hype was absurd from the 913. He performs like every other overhyped player. Dud.
It's hard to argue with that right now.
Damn. Yeah. Sad.
It's hard to argue. But again.
Lots of time.
There's a lot of time.
A lot of time.
But he wasn't ready to be up here yet.
No.
But again, the Royals had gone through every option in the minor leagues to try to find a bat. And so they looked at Caglione and they said, fine, you're crushing minor league pitching. Like, you're not learning anything more at this level, right? We're going to move you on to the next level. And I still maintain he's going to learn more failing at the big league level than he is dominating at the minor league level. Now, maybe we're not going to see it right away, and it may not be till next season when we see him get it fixed. But, you know, that's where he's going to learn the most, I think, at the big league level. But I've also had people around baseball say they may have to send him down again and figure some things out.
I hate that.
With Jack Caglione. You'd hate it, but a lot of guys go back down. A lot of guys go back down.
And they come back up better?
And they come back up better.
Okay.
Alex Gordon.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right here in our own backyard.
Yeah.
Just because you go back down doesn't mean you're a failure. It means you probably just weren't ready. You got a taste. You figured out what was good. You figured out what was bad. Go realize some success down in the minor leagues.
Yeah, you know what it takes.
And then come back to the big league level next year. Because, you know, they're going to need Jack Caglione. If this organization is going to be a successful organization, they need to make sure that they find ways for Jack Caglione to have success. They've got to find ways to make sure that this guy is one of the best players in baseball. And if that requires a stint back in the minor leagues, and that requires a stint back in the minor leagues, who the hell cares? But what I'm seeing from Jack Caglione right now is a guy who's overmatched at the big league level, both offensively and defensively.
And I do think it goes both ways. Like you say, he could build his confidence, come back up. Absolutely, we see that all the time, Alex Gordon. But we also see the other way, right, where go back down and that kind of ruins your confidence forever.
Sometimes it does, but then you weren't ready to be a Major League Baseball player anyway.
Probably the case.
You know?
Probably the case.
If you go down to the minor leagues, right, okay, and you don't get back to the big league level, then you weren't a Major League Baseball player anyway. And that's on you, right? That's on you to be a Major League Baseball player. That's on you to figure it out and to get better. There's only so much the coaches can do. There's only so much, you know, the manager can do. Eventually, it becomes on the player, and the player's got to figure it out. And if Jack Caglione were to get sent back down and sulk about it, and again, we're just talking. We're not saying this is going to happen.
Oh, no.
But if he gets sent down and he sulks about it and he spends more time mad that he was sent down versus working on getting better, he's only hurting himself at that point in time, because then he's never going to come back up to the big league level. You got to go down there and you got to figure things out, and you got to understand that, hey, this is part of the growing process. This is part of getting better as a player. This is part of the maturing process. Major League Baseball is hard. The NFL is hard. College football.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app, and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
It's hard. You're going to have your failures. And the minute they have their failures, we want to pounce on them. Oh, they're no good. They're no good. They're no good. Now they're 20 years old. They're learning.
Exactly,
you know?
Man. Yeah.
It's a process. It takes time. So whatever they decide to do with Caglione, I'm fine with. They want to send him down and get him better down there, fine. They want to keep him up here, fine. I don't care either way. But he's got to get better. He's got to figure out a way to turn this thing around. But you're right. From that text line that started this whole conversation, the overhyped player tends to be the guy that doesn't perform like we hype him up to be. Cody and Gold are next from training camp here on 96.5 The Fan.